Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On this episode of Rewives, we are visiting Orange County. In this episode, Shannon throws a 70s-themed party. It was anything but groovy, as she gets into a screaming match with Kelly Dodd. We are bringing in Emmy-nominated Jillian Michaels to put us through an OC Housewives boot camp. This is Real Housewives of Orange County, Season 11, Episode 5, Boogie Fights. Let's go. It's so funny because, first of all, when I started the show, and then first it was Orange County was the first. Like, it seems like it was there was Desperate Housewives, a scripted show, and then right. Orange County was the first. And it wasn't, Ramona got into a lot of trouble for saying that New York kind of put the franchise on the map, but she wasn't entirely incorrect. It wasn't that Orange County wasn't successful, because it was somewhat successful, but they don't live in LA or New York City, and it wasn't really a media darling until New York came in, because all the real socialites in New York were so incensed about people pretending that they were socialites on The Real Housewives of New York that it became this New York Magazine article, and kind of like then it became the
huge.
Then it was the beginning of this phenomenon. But when I was
wow.
There were 5 women on New York. There had been 5 on Orange County, give or take. So that's 10. Then Jersey, let's say 5. And Atlanta. So there were like 20 women that you could kind of keep up with. So basically now there are hundreds. And the reason I bring that up is that you've heard of NeNe and you've heard of certain people. I haven't seen a lot of them either. So it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, 100. My God, I didn't realize there were hundreds. That's wild.
Hundreds of women, which makes it more competitive to come in and
get the eyeballs
and do something, or for each person to try to be like, I'm the new this, or I have this product, or all
fitness
that
is
stuff.
The same though. I've been doing a pressing and everyone's like, well, you know, don't you think everybody's a fitness influencer? And it's like, everybody's a housewife now. Like, yeah, but you know, you've got the standouts, you got the people that break through, and the reason they break through is because they're relatable, right? They're saying something real. People aren't just entertained by them, but they also identify with them or admire them in one way or another. And anyway, I think, yes, there
that's
are
funny
hundreds,
though, because I don't know. I've found that recently, I've never believed that all press is good press. I've never believed that. But more recently, and particularly with the Housewives, people are sort of known for just being like villains or just being a bitch or like, you know, it's funny. You could be love to love or love to hate, but it can't be hate to hate. It could be someone that you love to hate and they're entertaining for that reason, or that you love to love them. But hate to hate doesn't seem to work in this genre.
No, I agree with you. I hate to hate's rough. Nobody wants to feel that way. And when you hate to hate someone, you tend to tune it out, I think.
Exactly.
You're right.
So I think that Orange County, and what I like about it, it's really messy. Like watching it, I had seen it in the beginning and I've seen certain episodes, you know, Beverly Hills really likes to be polished and shiny and perfect with the head to toe Fendi logos and perfect hairstyles. And, you know, New York is messy, but tries to pretend they're intellectual in some sort of way, or like, you know, above a certain like physicality that we've seen on Jersey and Atlanta. But Orange County is authentically messy. Like, I love when girls on TV are just saying, we don't give a shit. We want either the ratings, or this is how messy we really are. And we're just being who people might even hate, but this is who we are.
That's so interesting you say that, because last night my wife watched the episode with me and she's like, babe, this isn't real. I go, baby, I don't actually know. And she's like, is this real? And I was like, I think so. I know they'll say like, okay, this season, so-and-so turns 50 and we're going to do her birthday. And maybe they might stoke the fire, but you know, you can't just call someone dumb, right? Like, that, no producer can make you call someone dumb. And oh my God, it's...
Well, yeah, by the way, calling someone dumb would be a compliment on this episode. So it's boogie fights. Okay, so boogie I'm going to tell you and your wife, just so you know, this is vintage, this particular episode. This is a while back. It's not the very beginning, but Tamara's with this guy, Eddie. She's not with her first husband. And Shannon is still married to the guy who's wearing that like blonde afro, and he ended up, there was a massive cheating scandal that they alluded to in this episode, but he ends up leaving and being with some other woman, and she's got another boyfriend now. This is back when The Housewives was less produced, self-produced, because like I said, there were only a handful of women who were on these shows, and they were just walking into something brand new. It wasn't something where you would try to beat the show. You would watch all of the episodes and try to raise the game, try to like beat the process and, you know, get in your own head. Years later, you would see people looking perfect day and night as if they wake up like that, or you would see them creating more drama. This is back when it was like authentically messy. You just didn't give a shit. You were just living your own life. There were cameras there and que sera, sera. So it's not fully vintage, but it's not like the new regime of a little more polished and trying to be perfect, if that makes any sense.
It does make perfect sense. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is like a couple of chapters ago in OC. And I just, Vicky, the one wearing like the mod outfit, she's with an OG. She is the actual OG because she's the only, she was on the first season ever of any Housewives. And she's the only one still standing, but she's literally the only OG that is still has been on the show until recent.
Oh, wow. She's the only one.
Like, she was from the original cast. Okay.
Did Megan ever get pregnant, by the way? Do you know?
Megan got pregnant. They're divorced also.
Oh, that guy was a dick. What a jerk.
Okay. So let's start with what your thought was about Shannon's husband. They're at the costume store. For me, I'm thinking,
oh wow, my gosh, when the kids ask that question, you're asking
about the wet dream. About a wet dream. Have you ever had a wet dream to your dad? I just think that that's a question to avoid. I just think that's inappropriate. And I also don't, they discuss wet dreams amongst the boys and the girls in school. That seemed odd to me.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because that did stand out to me. And I was like, okay, I don't want to criticize the way anybody runs their household. I don't want to criticize the way anybody parents their kids. You know, I was immediately thinking that, because it kind of did make me a little like, is this an appropriate conversation for a prepubescent daughter with her dad?
So it felt weird that we're in a costume store and it's an entire family discussion, three girls, a mother, and the father about wet dreams. It just feels bizarre.
That's why I wondered if like the producers didn't stoke that. I was like,
yes,
is bizarre.
That's it. So to answer your question, how it goes, you know, it's basically that there's notes before you go into a scene. You're not a mummy and a robot. You're not going to like do everything that they say.
Right.
But they want to, you know, talk to Jillian about, you know, what happened last night that was a little inappropriate, what somebody brought up at the Italian restaurant. And they'll needle you about it. But that's moving traffic. It's not saying that like whatever happened last night, they made happen. It just means they, you know, start. When you begin a season, it's two people get together and have a conversation or go to dinner or something. Something will be a nuance, and then that's a nugget for like another scene, and then it's like a family tree. These branches just come out. So that seems like I don't know why that would come up at a costume store, but I was uncomfortable a little bit. Yeah,
I immediately was uncomfortable and immediately thought about you and I having this conversation and how to try to address it. Because like, I don't want to criticize the way people parent their kids. And like I said, I'm not a pro, but it did feel odd.
And what's crazy about when you see people promoting a certain life on reality television and social media, I thought that they seemed like in that scene, a decently happy family. Like, that's what's sad. They're divorced and it was disaster. And they're both with other people, but they seem like a fairly happy family and a nice family, don't they?
A nice family and a happy family, not the same thing. From that episode.
Not the episode, that scene. Now we're in the costume store and that scene.
Okay, just that scene. I mean, yeah. They seem like they function together. But having
but they're also on television and they're trying to be the happy family. Okay, fine.
Because I've been there.
Right.
We functioned and we were just about to break up after 8 years. So
got it. Okay. Yeah. And a lot of people go on reality TV to attempt to save a relationship, believe it or not. It's interesting. It's happened with a lot of different people. And it happens that you see a lot of housewives come on right before it's going to end, like Kelsey Grammer and Camille and a girl, Jules, and her husband, Michael, on New York. It happens a lot.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so Heather, I know Heather because years ago, Heather married to Terry, the plastic surgeon. I know her years ago. I was married to a man named Peter, and his brother, Danny, dated her. She was a young actress in L.A., and she was very nice, and now she's married to a very wealthy plastic surgeon in Orange County. And interesting how they really went there just discussing on camera. He has another show on E! Called Botch, so he's willing to play ball.
I know that show. Yep.
So he's willing to play ball, and you can see that because not every partner who's not getting paid is going to be on TV, like talking about their innermost insecurities about themselves as a father and not being with the kids. So it was interesting that he said that he couldn't be there on Mother's Day, and they were really airing their relationship, and you know, that he's putting more time into his work and saying yes all the time than the kids. And I want to know what you think of that, what you thought of that.
I think that my impression of them in that moment is that he was like over her. And that's not a man that cherishes his wife. Like, I've been busy. You've been busy. But I'll tell you right now that if it was my wife's birthday, there's nothing I would book on that day. It just isn't. I'd be like, it's my wife's birthday. And a guy that's like, oh my God, I felt like he wanted to be like, shut up. He's like, I just got home. Like, back the fuck off. I kind of picked up this. He's just like, I know, I can't. It's not my ha. Yeah, okay. Like, leave me alone. And to me, he's not prioritizing her. She bitches about it and nags him. And that just makes him probably feel more like he wants to escape the dynamic. But I could be, you know, I could be reading into it.
No, I mean, you're just saying, and also, let's just talk about the topic of being in a relationship, a committed relationship, and let's, for argument's sake, pretend it's working, and then going on reality television together. Like, that is such a risk. People really want to be famous and want to be wealthy so badly that they'll take that risk. I really haven't had one show that I produced where I was on there with my fiance then husband, but it was my show.
Yes.
Housewives, you literally have zero control.
Yep.
And I have not been really, I haven't been with anyone who would ever even want to do that. Like, my fiance now wouldn't be on for 1 second, like wouldn't blink an eyelash on it. He would say there's no upside for me. No one has anything that I want. He would not. So this is a successful doctor. And his wife, when he walks in, is saying, like, let's talk about basically our relationship. And she rightfully is saying, it's not just about Mother's Day, the mother, it's about the whole family, like the example, which I think was interesting because I wouldn't have thought of it that way.
I definitely thought of it that way. And I think he's doing him 100%. And the show has elevated, obviously, right? He's doing a lot for his career, as you mentioned. You know, the women do it because the monster brands have been built off of it. Mm-hmm. But it seems as though the relationship is already at that like brutal phase. I know that phase, man. That's a brutal phase.
It's a brutal phase, and many people stay together for whatever reason.
I don't know how they do it though. Like, when I got there with my ex, and we had, you know, very briefly a show that we controlled on E, and nobody humiliated anybody.
Right.
And everything seemed great right up until a year later. I was like, I have to find a way out of this relationship. With that said, though, on Housewives, I can't even imagine, had we put ourselves in that kind of position, where it would have gone. And I would never want my kids to see that. You know, I don't want them to see the ugly parts of our relationship ever.
That's so true.
To know that. You know,
that's
kids
so true.
Bring a different element.
Well, also, that's great, because back to the costume store, as a parent, you have to be the responsible one to play chess and know that your kids are going to be in school. And in school, the other kids might say, you were talking about wet dreams. Like, that's embarrassing. You know, you got to protect your kids. Like, and that is actually embarrassing now that I think of it. You know, so anyway, so now we get on to Vicky, whose daughter came home. She had a medical issue. And Vicky's... It's funny because I'm thinking about some of these people who are these wacky, crazy characters, and yet I think they're good parents. So Vicky's at the house and she's like doting on her daughter. She's happy her daughter's home. It's part of the reason she's ready to go out and party. Her daughter's home from being sick. And she's like, she's a very overbearing mother, but I get it. Like, my daughter loves it, but she loves being a mother and loves being a grandmother. And I like seeing her in that role. Like, I like seeing her as a grandmother.
Yeah, she did. She was very natural with that. You're absolutely right. I thought that the relationship that Kelly had with her kid was also kind of cute. My advice to Kelly, although you've said this is, you know, come and gone, which I didn't realize while I was watching it, is like, girl, nobody needs to be hammering tequila shots with cameras around.
Oh, we're getting there. Oh, yeah. No. It's funny because I get the sense that she's a mess in many ways because she'll just say what she's really thinking. But she seems like when she's with her daughter, she seems like she's a decent mother when she's with her daughter. She says that she's strict, which I believe actually strict and has like some sort of a code, but indulgent. And she has an only child. The husband seems like she's someone who doesn't seem to be, should be on, for her daughter's sake, should be on reality television because of the way that she, you know, is free to act and thinks that they're separate issues. But with her daughter, I thought, and going to Justin Bieber and all that, I thought she seems like a pretty good parent. I like the way she is with her daughter so far.
I thought that scene was cute and the kid was like giving her shit. She's like, you can't be a Justin Bieber fan. She's like, why? You were 20 when he was born. And it reminded me of like my kids giving me sass. And I thought that was cute. And the kid was precocious and I liked that. And I felt kind of in that moment, like I identified with that dynamic. But then when she got schnockered, I was like, no.
Or I know, no for her life, but yes for the show, which is the problem. All right, so let's get it going. So now Vicky, you know, is a grandmother, and she's over at Kelly's house with Kelly's ex, but they're back together then, and they're divorced now, and he doesn't seem like he has a lot of power in that relationship, or like I don't know what he is. He seems like he's an extra in the scene of their life. But they're all pounding tequila shots, which I just find so interesting because I feel that women that are middle-aged and older party harder than the young kids, like, that are out doing Molly. Like, I really
do. Can I ask you how? Because I can't drink at all anymore. I will be instantly sick. I mean, it's done. The show's over.
Hard alcohol? Absolutely not. None. Like, I can drink wine. Zero.
One and a half glasses, two, and I'm like, that's it. One more than that, I will be sick as a dog. I can't.
No, you're dehydrated. You're depleted. You have a terrible headache. Crap, throw feel up, like dry. Crap.
Thank you. Yes. 100%.
No, and they can, much less shots. Like, not just diluted with club soda, like shots.
I was dying when she did that. And then the cute one in the, I don't know if she's lovely or not, but the one who had the fitness competition that was like, I'm not drinking. I have a competition, which I totally identified with when you know you're like, I got to be ready for something. I'm not drinking. And all of a sudden she's like, where's the vodka?
Tamara is a partier like Vicky usually.
Oh,
but she like had found religion in a deeper way and found fitness in a deeper way. And this seems like that time of her life where she's found her and Eddie, she's found her faith more deeply and her fitness. I think like she's made a change. I think they own a gym. I don't know what they invested in a gym. Okay, so they're doing shots like full blown, and I didn't count, but the ones that we saw on camera, I think we saw them do like 5 shots on camera total. So what the hell really? How insane. And you're on TV getting wasted. Like, you're not going to remember anything and you're on television.
I know.
Like, that doesn't seem like a great idea.
It's a horrendous idea. Everybody knows that alcohol literally shuts down the part of your brain that manages impulsivity, right?
Judgment.
You are completely, it's science.
That's
it. The booze goes in there, shuts down. You're
no good
on.
Decisions. Yeah.
Zero. There's no filter. You're on. And to go that hard as they were doing it, I was like, how is she doing that? Because she's like barely older than me. Because she said she was born in like 73, 4, 5, something. Or my age, like right around my age. And I was like, how the hell is she doing that, man? She's going so hard. And then sure enough, there was like a complete meltdown. And the guy she was with, I thought he could barely speak because he was so wasted. You're saying he's kind of persona non grata, but I thought he was schnockered.
I don't know what he was, but the first couple of drinks, you know, makes it that you can't make any good decisions. So the other bad decisions are to drink more, and then you're off to the fucking races. So before we get to there, just let's address one more person, and then we're gonna get to the party. The girl, Megan, is with the baseball player, and she's doing the IVF shots. It felt a little forced, like forcing the story. Like, she needed to have a story. Her story is the shots, and like putting him. I know that he seemed like a dick, but she's putting him on the spot in the car, and it feels a little like she's acting, like wanting him to say that it's so amazing. And yes, I know he probably doesn't have emotions because he's a baseball player, which is probably also a stereotype and ridiculous, but it's just weird to be like, can you now emote in the car on television about my IVF? I just feel like there are a lot of forced discussions in this episode about relationships that I haven't, it seemed like the relationship episode, they're forcing the discussion of the puberty talk, they're forcing Heather with the husband who's not home, and now they're forcing this like IVF, you don't care, marriage, relationship discussion.
I just feel like he didn't need to mock her. He's like, I don't think it's crazy. And I wanted to punch him in the face when he did that. I was like, dude, easy. You know, do not disrespect your wife on camera like this. It's
misogynistic,
it's not,
husband.
It is not a good look, homie. Like, not cool at all. And I get it. If you don't want to have the conversation, don't be on the show. That's the show.
Right. Right.
Like, you know what you signed up for. Don't take it out on her, because you're right. I'm sure they told her, like, talk to him about this, talk to him about that, like you said. And she's going into it. And I do kind of, maybe she was genuinely sort of like, can you believe, like, the next time I see you, I'm going to carry our child in me? Like, that's kind of wild.
Yeah, you're right.
Crazy. Oh, I wanted to kill him. I was like, do not mock your wife.
But looking back, this happened. The only person that isn't divorced on that show is the Heather, the one with the Mother's Day conversation. Wow. Tamara, the one who's studying for the fitness competition, is still with that man, but she's divorced. So the only one on that show that's not divorced is Heather, the one having the Mother's Day conversation. And this woman, Megan, public divorce too, also. You know, I saw this with Kelsey Grammer and Camille when they went to the Tonys together right before splitting up. It's like the husband somehow is being forced to do this, and you can see, and they can't help but like make a little snide remark to their wife on camera, and the audience just knows this is fucking going downhill fast. This is the beginning of the end.
Yep, 100%. You cannot disrespect your significant other like in public, let alone on camera. I hate when people do that to each other.
Well, and they're also playing to, do you ever notice at dinners with other people, you're with another couple, they're also playing to the audience. Like, they're playing to you by disrespecting their person. It's almost like he's playing to the audience. Like, he thinks we're going to side with him making fun of her. You know what I mean? You see a couple, like, where one of them's a little, like, looks at you and is like, oh, well, she doesn't like to do blah, blah, blah. And you're like, go take care of your own relationship. Don't, like, bring your shit over here.
Oh, my gosh. I totally agree with you. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I did not like it. It immediately made me dislike him. I was like, yuck. I don't care what, you know, sport or whoever, you're not emotive. I don't care if your mother didn't love you the right way, whatever it is. Do not disrespect your wife by mocking her in front of, you know, however many millions of people.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, all right. So now we're in the party. Let's just get into the costumes first, because I lived at the roller rink. I was roller girl years before that on the Housewives at Halloween. I just want to know, was everybody dressed like the 70s, or was some of it the 60s, which they brought up in that store? Kelly and Tamara went to the store and Kelly kept saying, I think that's the 60s. And she's like, no, it's a 70s. She's like, I think that's the 60s. Like, Austin Powers mod, isn't that the 60s, not 70s?
I gotta be honest, you looked way deeper into that than I did. I was too busy, you know, being kind of taken aback by all the things you just mentioned. So I did not go there, but I will revisit it. I think you might be right. I don't remember some of that Austin Powers vibe being in the 70s genre.
If you think about it, so like Vicky looked like Austin Powers.
That is the 60s.
That's what I thought. So it felt like... It felt like a lot of people, they were like mixed up in what era they were in. I mean, I know their 60s blended into the 70s, but it felt like, I'm being too literal, but anyway, the 70s is my time. Like, I think that Kelly did actually have the 70s down. And that big giant afro, it was like, whatever. I know they're having fun, but it didn't feel... And what's her name did look like Mrs. Roper. That was ridiculous.
That's true. That was cute.
So they do shots. They walk into this party. Now, first of all, they get into this party. They're wasted. And then the girl, the blonde girl, who's the friend of Shannon, there was a pre-existing argument going on between Shannon, the birthday girl, and Kelly, the one whose daughter was at the manicurist. Okay, so there's a pre-existing argument going on. They're walking into this party with a conflict as usual. So they're trying to be, so that's why Shannon's saying in one of the interviews, I'm going to be nice to her. I just don't need to be best friends with her. Whatever she said, I'm paraphrasing. They're going to make it nice for this scene. But it feels like a setup that those two girls, the blonde girl and the other girl, the ones with the like deep cut 70s sequin jumpsuits, it did seem like a setup when she was like, oh, yeah, I know you. I met you. You weren't with him. You were with another guy.
Yeah,
I would kill someone. I mean, that was that felt like a setup. No question. Right. Shannon brought her to bring that up.
She was absolutely fucking with her. But who's the Nadia girl, though? The one that had the accent.
It's that's the two one? Of them came together. It feels like right. Shannon.
OK, that's because I was like, who is that lady? Because she hasn't been in any of the other shows. And she was the shitster, for sure.
Well, what happens is a lot of people want to be on these shows. And so this has happened to me before, too. So people who aren't actually on the show but live in your community or that neighborhood and they know of the people on the show, they're the ones who usually want to out people who are actually on the show because they see the way that they're portraying their lives to the public. But they live in that town and they're like, no. I know she's fucking around on her husband. So they tell somebody who's on the cast, which is why it seems like Shannon brought them in. Because it's like Shannon must have met these women in their community. Wow. That's what I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but that's what goes down. Like these two women are in the community. Someone told the producers, because all that happens is cast and producers just gossip all the time about everything going on. And then it comes into the show. So these two women were invited. They probably want to shit stir a little because they live there in Orange County and they're not on the show. And maybe this is an entry into it, or maybe just light a little match and be the good cul-de-sac chatter. But those women were undeniably planted there to say that thing to Kelly, because that's a guaranteed argument in a big scene.
It was like, you know, match kerosene, boom. And she was locked and loaded, already drunk. And you could tell the minute, and then the girl's like, she's talking about you.
And Tamara said that. Yeah, but Kelly's the queen of take the bait. Kelly's the queen of take the bait. Because you could have just said nothing and it won't air. Like, you could just be chill, like, oh, yeah, I met you. Yeah, I was in it, whatever, no big deal. She got lit because she was wasted. Yep. And you're right. Now, Tamara, who before, it's funny because in that episode, Tamara talks about how she and Heather, Roller Girl, didn't speak for a while because she told something. She, like, Tamara basically, I think, is like a tattletale. So history to have told, repeated something. I think she said it in the, she said in this episode, I repeated something I shouldn't have. And now she goes and repeats something she shouldn't. She walks to the other scene to tell Kelly and Vicky that the girls sitting on the couch are talking about her.
Oh God. Yeah. Like it is like watching a car crash unfold in those moments because you know, this one's going in there to stir it up. And Kelly, I just took it was crazy, like hooked instantly. And I was dying. And my wife, it was so funny because she's, as it unfolded, she was like on her computer planning, you know, a trip for the summertime. Right. She's like in and out of it. But by the time the show was over, she's like, when the one girl called the other girl dumb and this and my wife.
She's
like,
still talking about it now, like this morning. Yes, it's like, yeah, yes. She's invested. It's like a soap opera. You get invested. You don't even know any of these people. And now she's invested. So Kelly's like, I'm just looking for my purse. And the girl's like, I love that Kelly's so crazy. You need a crazy person like that, because Kelly's like, I'm looking for my purse. And the girl goes, what does it look like? And she goes, doesn't matter what it looks like. Like, doesn't it? It does matter. It does matter what it looks like.
So we're going to find your purse. Yeah.
It feels relevant. What does it look like? So the girl, so she was ready to go. She's like, it doesn't matter. I'm just looking for my purse. And then we find out that girl did in fact move her purse, which is like, that girl gave zero fucks, by the way.
No, I know.
Which is great.
Vicious. That's why I was like, who is this savage?
Savage. But it's a lesson in life to not, you can make yourself wrong, because Kelly, you know, she says Mrs. Roper repeatedly, which is a little nasty, but fine. And it's the birthday girl. But what she does do is take it to the mattresses when she says to that girl, you look like every other girl in Orange County.
Oh God, yeah, the blonde with the this and the that,
and the big tits or something.
And your husband cheated, I remember her saying, like, you're dumb.
Imagine if someone said to you, you look like every girl in Orange County. Like, there's something crazy, and Kelly's done this for years, where she just she'll say anything. Like, she doesn't care. And it's funny, because Ramona on my season, not that crazy by any stretch of the imagination, and they're actually friends, but she would say something to somebody and then, like, get in so much trouble. But she could still have fun the rest of the night and woke up the next day and probably justified it. If I woke up the next day and knew that I had said that or something, or one-tenth of what she said, I would be obsessing. I'd be like, I have to leave the show after that night.
Yeah.
I have to leave the show. Like,
leave the show. You have to change your name.
Yeah, change your address.
To another country. Like, yes. She's Lane Maxwell. You vanish somewhere into the middle of nowhere, girl, where nobody can find you until they do. Like, I would just be like, no, I.
And her husband didn't even get involved. Like, imagine the husband that just lets the wife go crazy like that. It would never happen, but Paul would have me by a shock collar. Like, he would be like, get the fuck. I mean, we would never be there. It's like saying,
He would be with you.
If for some reason, someone. You know, if someone said something untoward to me and I laid them out, but I kept it, would never, he might be like, we got to go.
My impression of you, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you take no shit. But I imagine the way you would lay them out is eloquent.
Yes.
You know, when I defend myself, I do it very calmly, very strategically. And I shut it down. So sometimes I don't always fight fire with fire. Sometimes I fight fire with water. And that makes the other person feel silly. And I can make my point and handle it. I'm like, you don't need to speak to me this way. That behavior's uncalled for. So now it's like, okay, you've taken the high ground, right? You've let them know that their behavior is bad and is looked upon badly by not just you, but everybody else. And then you can make your case and then be done with it. But I'm like, why are they engaging like this? This is not the way to do it.
Because there is, it's probably towards the end of the season. They're exhausted. Just add cameras. Just add alcohol. Just add people you are not normally friends with in your life. And a layering of 20 different dramas before this. And it pops off and it busts open like a pinata. Okay, so who is right and who is wrong? If anybody's even right.
Who's right? Nobody's right. They're all a mess here with this incident. They seem lovely, and I'm certainly no better than anybody else on that show. But I think all of it could have been handled better/differently.
So Shannon is at fault for bringing these two like shit stirs, and Kelly takes the bait and lights the place on fire.
100%. Yeah, in my opinion, it's absolutely a two-way street.
Is Tamara wrong?
100. Yeah, because she knew what she was doing. Like the real friend is the friend that's like, okay, this is going to be a mess, and gets you and leaves. You know, we all have that friend that's like, now, dude, we're done here. We're done here. Car's here. Car's outside. Get in the car. We're leaving now. You know, that's the real friend, not the one that's like, so-and-so just said you're ugly and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right. But that's not, that's why reality TV is fucked up in this genre, in this particular medium, because it's designed that's a more successful. So someone's a recovering alcoholic, they blow that off and they break and they get wasted and they act like this. That's a better episode than them just staying the course, which is why it's an upside down and it's a little fucked up as a concept, as a construct.
I don't disagree with you, which is why I generally don't partake in it.
Right.
Because of that.
Right. You got to think about it.
That's why I've never actually watched it, because I sometimes wonder if there is the vulnerable person, right? That isn't you or that isn't me, and that doesn't have the ability to make the platform work for us the best way we can. Like, listen, I had a lot of issues with Loser. I was on the show, off the show, fighting with the producers, all of the things, but I never let them destroy me, and they sure tried, right?
Right.
You never let them destroy you. I'm sure they tried. You became bigger than that show. I became bigger than Biggest Loser. We managed to, you know, still build a career.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. You played the game.
You played the game. Exactly. Right. So if you know, the game is taking advantage of people that are not capable of swimming in those shark-infested waters, then I kind of do wonder if it's bad of me to watch it. Then I'm like, am I exploiting that person? And that's why I kind of never.
Right, but I'll take it a step further. Many of these women in many of these shows used to be, quote unquote, somebody that they themselves felt were more relevant, married to someone wealthy, married to someone with a name, had something going on, their kids are grown up, something different that they felt that they had an identity. And now they are middle age to senior, and they're getting an opportunity to make a little money, be a little relevant, and touch a little fame. And a lot of them don't have any other means to a source of income. Imagine becoming famous at 50 years old and becoming known and can start some candle business or whatever you want to do. And people will actually buy it. You get a little bit of relevance. I'm saying it's making a deal with the devil. There's something they're getting back to, or they wouldn't do it. That's what's fascinating about the whole machine.
You're absolutely right. No, you're 100% right. Sometimes, I did a podcast for, I believe, somebody on New Jersey. It's just, the woman has like 2.something million followers on Instagram. I'm like, I have dedicated my life to being an expert at this, this, and this.
Right.
And this one, who was very sweet, she's so sweet, but she tells somebody to buy collagen, right? She's selling crazy amounts of collagen. Right. I'm like, hold on a minute here. Right. I spent 30 learning about this shit.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, there's that. And then, you know, Bravo gets to put that charity on with Megan, the charity for colon cancer, to like, you know, absolve a little bit of the guilt. There's always like a little bit of a charity somewhere to like, you know, absolve some of the guilt, rinse it a little bit. So anyway, it's a conversation. I was part of it. I played the game, you know, no different than Kim Kardashian played the fame game. She was Paris Hilton's closet organizer. And, you know, plus one, and she played the fame game and she won. So she had to pay her, you know, it is what it is. So you can't hate the player. You got to hate the game. So,
agreed.
So these women have had a little moment in the light. And believe me, there's nothing more desperate than a fired housewife. Most of these women are there by choice. All of them. I know of two housewives, I know of two housewives that have left on their own besides myself that just really left. They all say they've left, but they've all been fired except for two that I can remember. So everybody gets fired and begs to be back, wants to be in any iteration whatsoever. They want the light. They want the relevance. They're willing to go have those fights and be exploited and be all over in the media because they want the hit.
Yeah.
I'm in a very rare small group, and Andy will verify that.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So now let's get to Vicky. So there's a preamble, which is that Vicky is in a relationship with this guy, Brooks. He faked cancer. The audience was on this cancer journey with them, thought it was real. People suspected it. He faked cancer, and it's a big thing. And that other guy, David, is basically like, you guys are disgusting.
Because that's the lowest of the low thing that was happening there. I was like,
right. So, but,
okay.
And is there, you know, is it a double standard about a man speaking to a woman like that? I am old fashioned in that way.
Here's what's interesting is that it did bother me the way he got in her face.
But if, like, it was a woman getting in a man's face, it wouldn't have bothered you as much. The man and the woman did exist. Be honest.
Here's what bothered me is that his body language was aggressive. If he stood back and was like, no, that's low, that's dirty, that's low, that's dirty. To me, I'm like, all right, she, you know, you're absolutely allowed to. But when he got up in her face, it felt like physical intimidation. And that's when I was pretty uncomfortable about it. I was like, that's not appropriate.
Well, what if we take it to the next level? So no matter what, that you're saying there's no excuse. She could have faked cancer, but it's a physical violation.
That I didn't like. I get that he's like, that's the lowest of the low. That's the lowest of the low. But he got in her face.
There's a
he
physical
got up in her face. And you know, when people get there, you know, we're seconds away from a physical altercation.
Exactly.
I've seen it a million times.
It was personal space, like a body language violation.
And he was like, I'm going to intimidate you by being taller. I'm going to intimidate you by being a man. Like, I'm going to use my physicality to get up in your grill.
She's the housewife. He's not a main character. He's married to a person who was cast on a show. So is he supposed to be inserting himself? Like, there are some people, like Joe Gorga in New Jersey, he gets in the conflict himself with the women. So, like, there's a lesbian couple in the Miami show, and it's Martina Navratilova, and the wife is the main housewife. So if Martina got into someone else's face, it'd be like, you're not even the housewife. Like, so there's two elements. It's one that he's, like, being overbearing, and it's a physical body language violation. But two, okay, like, we're women on a show together in conflict. Like, there's a line when the husband is coming in, like, on the front lines of the conflict. That's what I see also. Do you get that?
I do understand that now. I didn't realize that he wasn't, like, a main character, because he had enough camera time in that episode to kind of make me feel like the husbands are part of it too.
They are part of it. And in some shows more than others. In New York, they're literally background for the most part. And it varies with persons. Sometimes a person's husband is so charismatic that that person and the housewife make a whole character. Like, you need both. Alex and Simon were in New York and he was a character. Without him, I don't know if she would have made it into the show. Melissa Gorga in Jersey is a character in her own right, but her husband is a larger than life character. So he adds to the sauce. He's been in his own scenes, he's carried an entire episode, which is why I put him on my Mount Rushmore. But in this case, this guy is on, like, the front lines in the conflict with a housewife, and it seemed aggressive. And I don't know if his wife even knew that that was going down, but there is something. I'm sure she's meddled in his affair.
Oh, she has to know, because remember, she came in and that's David, right? That's the guy.
That's
with the
David,
blonde.
Yeah.
Okay. She's like, David, they're not being nice to me. David, they're being mean to me. So she recruited him to get involved.
Exactly.
And the other issue that she was dealing with.
Exactly.
You know, I would never fault them for getting involved or having an opinion. But when he got up in her face, I thought that was really inappropriate. That's made me uncomfortable.
Interesting.
That's where I got to draw the line there. I do get what you're saying, though, because I'm not familiar enough with the inner workings of the show to know where their place is and if he was outside of it. But when he got physically in her grill, if any man did that to me, I would not handle that well. I would not handle that well.
And back to the Nadia and the blonde Newport girl. Do you feel that that's breaking girl code? That she, like, said to the
girl? The whole thing breaks girl code, Bethany.
No, but specifically, like, I see you and you're out with somebody and it's not your person. I'm going to bring that up at a part. Like, it ain't my business. Like, you don't, do you bring, you know what I mean? Like, that, that in front of the guy, like, that's shots fired.
100%. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing does kind of break the girl code, and that's on the scale of breaking the girl code.
Right.
I don't remember, again, which is the more aggressive DEFCON here, but that's up there on the scale.
Right.
Sure. Shitty. Right.
So now, first of all, did Heather's husband push her when you saw the reenactment of the film?
No, he did not push her at all. He was dancing and he had his back to her and put her hands out maybe to stop him from bumping into her.
Yes. Okay.
And that knocked her over. But that couple, I was like, these guys are done. I can't believe you told me they're still together.
I know.
She's like, he pushed me. And I was like, whoa, that's like, you must feel on some level like he's, you know, metaphorically pushing you because he didn't touch
you. Oh, nice. Well, then they have that deep conversation. And do you think, I wonder, I'd like to find out. I'm going to find out before this airs. I'd like to find out if he changed. What do you think in this moment of this conversation of him saying he's going to change and her saying, like, you have to say no and, like, trying to give him advice that it's not for them, it's for him?
If he did change, then it's because the producers made him change, because in real life, they don't change.
You don't think? Oh, interesting. Okay.
Nah, in real life, they don't change.
So David says, this is the thing. See, you think it's just a physical violation. David says, shut your fucking mouth. You're lying. Shut your fucking mouth. Like, that's insane.
But they're all saying insane stuff. They're all saying stuff that I find insane. So, you know, if we're getting into, like, men and women, I try to look at it as, like, where are we actually equal, right? Intellectually, we're equal. You know, financially, we could be all these different ways we could be equal. But, you know, women have children. Men don't. There's an inequality there that women can create life, okay? Like, men are physically bigger. They just are. They have more muscle, more bone. They're taller. They are physically stronger. They have evolved to be physically stronger. So if my business partner says the F word to me, or my brother and I get in a fight and he's like, shut your fucking mouth. Look, it would piss me off. Don't get me wrong. And I would be upset. But if anybody disrespected me, I would be equally upset, girl or boy. I would not, if a woman said, shut your fucking mouth to me. And if my wife said that to me, she would never, of course.
Right, I'm saying, right.
She wouldn't be my wife. If I said that to her, I wouldn't be her wife. Like, if anybody says, shut your fucking mouth, man or woman,
right,
I'm done.
Right.
So I'm equal. If a woman, if I was like the worst, and, you know, when I was much younger, if I got in a fight with somebody in my 20s at a bar drunk, and someone got in my face and it was a girl, I don't think I'd be like, bitch, get out of my face. Like, right. That's probably how I would, if a man did it, oh my God.
Vicky's saying to David, oh, and you cheated on your wife. But then I think she says, like, no wonder you cheated on your wife. Either meaning that you're a scumbag to her. Like, she's giving a preamble. She's saying, like,
she's
you speak to your wife this way. You speak to your wife this way, which probably he does. We're going to find out. Later, we probably find out he did. And what do you think about, like, why don't you have another drink? Why don't you have another drink? Like, drink shaming. Like, that saying to Kelly, like, she seems provoked by that. She keeps saying Mrs. Roper over and over, but the line, and they keep saying the same thing as if it's going to have a different effect. Mrs. Roper, a.k.a. Shannon,
well, she's
keeps
drunk.
Saying, have
so
another drink.
So she can't
drink.
Insult her properly. That's why.
Right. Have another drink. Have another. It's taunting.
She's calling her an alcoholic.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you know, she's basically saying you're a drunk, you're an alcoholic, like go get shit faced. Nothing you say matters. And it's like, that's the part where you're just kind of like, oh, you know, it breaks your heart. Cause I wondered if maybe, I don't know enough about her. I was like, maybe she just got crazy and it was one night, or like, is she an alcoholic? Does she have a problem with this? And then in her interview, she goes, I had a lot to drink. And I was like, yeah, girl.
Like, yeah. Like more than you've ever had in your life.
Homie. Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck?
I wouldn't survive this night. And I'm telling you, I'm pretty strong in housewives. Like, I don't know. Somebody called somebody a pedophile.
Oh, I did not hear that.
The word pedophile is in my notes. But somebody called somebody a pedophile, either Brooks or David or somebody called somebody.
Oh, yes. She was saying that he cheated and he was a pedophile. So I thought it meant.
Oh, a young woman.
Yes. That he had an affair with a much younger woman.
Oh, pedophile is a fucking serious word, too.
Yeah.
The two ones who are drinking tequila, just add tequila is what the episode should have been called. Just add to kill ya, because the two of them calling people fucking pedophiles and shut your fuck. I mean, it's crazy. That was, I don't know. I keep watching these and being like, is this real? I watched,
I was on it. This can't be real, babe. This can't be real. And
it
I was
like,
I don't know. I don't
crazy
know.
Shit happens and people are stressed out in their lives. Yeah. Wow. And then at the end, what would possess two people to wear a costume with big bushes and penises? Like, what does that mean? People had bigger penises in the 70s? I don't understand.
I thought, wow. Like, who
was it? Little Boogie Nights? Like,
what the F? I mean, she mentioned what's so funny is she mentioned streakers. And you know what? I had completely forgotten all about that.
Oh, you're right. You're right. But that was that 70s?
Yeah. Remember when someone ran across? I mean, you and I were children. Like, you can say you own that decade, but I call bullshit on you. Like, I don't even think you were, you know, were you sucking your thumb?
I was born in 70.
I was born in 74. So, okay. I mean, you kind of, right. You know, maybe. But I do remember, like, someone streaking the Academy Awards or something, didn't they? Or something?
Oh, I don't know.
It was
but
a thing.
Oh, because in the movie Old School with Will Ferrell, he was streaking. I didn't know it was like a 70s thing, but what the hell? That was awkward to me. That'd be like, it was embarrassing. And by the way, it did look like a little bit of a weird party. Like, I will say, it looked like a sparse, I didn't understand.
Me, what I thought it was all staged. That's why I'm like, okay. They're like, we got to have a party. Where are we going to do it? Let's rent the
space.
That's
true. That happens. That's exactly what does happen. No, that is what it is. Because and the lights are really bright and you can't play the music you want because it won't clear. So it is awkward. It's like sometimes they're fun, but anybody who's there has to look at like pockets of people with lights and cameramen like around you. And they're not going to walk and be like, hey, Jane, because the cameraman aren't going to disperse. So if you walk into a conversation with a friend that invited you, there's a cat, like, you're not going to walk into that. So people, it's very awkward. Housewives parties are very, very awkward. They're very bright. You cannot play normal music. And there are groups of people surrounded by lights and cameras in these little huddles. So then you have to be in these other, and that's where all the action is. And that's where the people that are at the party don't even know what's actually happening at the party because they're not in that huddle.
Yeah, see, that's what I kind of thought. I thought it was like produced in such a way that made it awkward.
Yes.
Personally.
100%. Wow. All right. So who won the night? Who lost the night? If you had to say, and who do you have to identify with one person. And I know who that is, I think.
Oh God, I don't know. Okay. Who won the night? I think the fitness lady.
Tamara.
Was she? Oh, she started the shit. Now put her aside. Put her aside. Okay. Megan, I think, was the most just clean here. Came out clean.
Okay. But a housewife that just sits in the middle and isn't that exciting and interesting doesn't make it. Because they don't drive any story. That's all I'm saying. I don't even know if she's still on the show. I don't think she is. But they don't make it. They don't drive story. She's not, you know, that there's a woman who was on Jersey who I love, Jacqueline Larita, but she wasn't like shit stirring her act. So she, you can have whoever you want to win that. I'm just telling you as a side. So she won the night for you because she was like kind and cute. She's very pretty too. To be superficial, I thought she was very pretty.
I just thought she was sweet. She wasn't a car crash. You know, I'm like, okay.
Well, Heather wasn't a car crash with the husband, but you didn't like her confronting him through the door.
Not that I didn't like her confronting him through the door. I would have, if she was my friend, I would have advised her to approach him about it differently.
Okay.
And I would say, Mom, you can't nag him. Like, all you're going to do is just keep pushing him more and more, you know, away for work, for this, for that. Pull him aside privately, and then you can talk about it maybe in an interview. I don't know. I know they don't allow that, but just be like, babe, listen, you're gone on Mother's Day.
Right.
I mean, I get it. And I appreciate, I'd be like, build. You know, Heather,
right.
Like, appreciate that you provide for us. I appreciate that you participate. But it.
And that could have been an on-camera conversation, just not right in the door. Yeah, okay. So she
would have
not
handled it differently instead of being like, really, Mother's Day? Like, she called
her
a bitch, even though if someone did that to you, not a bitch, bitchy. She comes off bitchy. Even though
well,
someone's
a little better
TV.
That she played, you know, I have a chef, I don't cook. It's that whole like I make reservations. It's that persona of like rich housewife that she's playing. And frankly, he's playing the part of rich working house husband. Like she's playing the role of I'm home with the kids, I don't cook, I'm rich, we're in the big mansion. And he's playing the role of I go out and make the money to support this lifestyle of her champagne and Chanel lifestyle. Like it's a persona. I'm sure it's actually true, but you can't have it both ways. You can't have that life. He's supporting that lifestyle. Housewives is not supporting that lifestyle. So he could just say, listen, you want the Chanel, you want the Champers? This is what I got to do. He didn't say that. He could have said it.
He seemed fed up. Like he didn't even want to engage. That's why I was like, oh, yeah. He doesn't want to deal with her. That was the impression I kind of got, that he doesn't want to deal with her. Whether he's leaving on Mother's Day and finding an excuse to not be able to say no on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Or he's not engaging significantly in that conversation. I felt like he didn't want to deal with her. And then I felt like a woman who feels ignored, she's nagging at him the wrong way.
Yes.
And that's going to turn anyone off, even though I understood her.
Yes. It's a very very typical thing. I get what you're saying. And it's very textbook. I get it.
You know, if she was my homie, I would have guided that conversation very differently before it happened. But.
Okay. Right. All right. So she did not win the night. Megan won the night. Who is the worst offender of the entire episode? I can't wait for this one.
This sucks because I actually like feel for her, but I think Kelly just unraveled.
Yeah. Same. Then I felt for her too. And I liked her with her daughter. She unraveled and was provoked.
I did. Yeah. And she took the bait. And here's my thing is if she was my homie, mm-hmm. I'd be like, girl, I don't know what's going on with the booze, but you got to chill. Like, you know, I've had friends that go hard like that. And mm-hmm. You're not 20. It's not a good look. It's sloppy and it's embarrassing. Pull your shit together. You know, you can have that conversation with your friends. Like, what happened? Like I had a friend that came over to my house and she was 40s, going through, you know, breakup, this, that, has a teenage son, and like drunk. And then one time so drunk and so stoned in front of my kids, in front of her kids. And I was like, mama,
right.
Stop. Like, I've known you a long time. I get that you're going through shit, but this is not a good look.
Right.
Especially in front of the kids.
Shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. Well, also, I want to say to you that this is not representative of an excellent Housewives episode, and I'll tell you why. There wasn't a ton, because I was going to say to you, what was your favorite part? There wasn't a ton of humor. In a good Real Housewives of Atlanta episode, there's a shit show, but there's a lot of humor, like funny, witty, you know, banter and humor. And New York, there's always some level of comedy. Like, comedy is the thread. And often, not always in Jersey, this is more Jersey-ish, but this was just sort of like tragic. It was like a shit show mess. It wasn't really smart or funny. Yes, it wasn't smart or funny. It didn't have all the elements. There are episodes that I've seen that have all the episodes of Good Housewives show. It's like a roller coaster. You're laughing. You're horrified. It's a lot of drama. It's intelligent. So this was not on a like rating score of drama. It was at a 10. But of a well-rounded, intelligent, humorous episode, it was probably a 5, I would say.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I didn't find it funny at all.
Yeah.
But I
did,
if I had to pick a scene, it's the one with Kelly and her kid. Because that
too.
I actually identified with. So it's like,
me too.
Who did you identify with her right until the, you know, when she unraveled? Because she's like, I'm strict. And the kid's like, oh, bullshit. You're not a Bieber fan. You know. Maybe you are. Oh, it's my way or the highway. It certainly didn't look like that. The kid's like, I'm getting gels or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was so cute with the kid. And I was like, God, this woman looks amazing. Look how good she looks, you know, for her age, which I know you're not supposed to say for her age, but the reality is for her age, she looks great.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are certain expectations when you get 40, 45, 50, 55. Yeah. That certain things are going to start happening to you. And I thought she's been staving that off well. I was like, her body looks great. Her skin looks great. She looks great. I was impressed that she takes care of herself that way. And right up until she would have been the one that I thought, because I thought, wow, she takes care of herself. She's got this funny relationship with her kid. And then when she just got schnockered, I was like, that is not me. I do not get sloppy at parties and shit. No.
Right. And also, she ends up getting let go, and this and so does Tamara, the one who's in fitness, and they bring her back like now. It hasn't aired yet, but the show starts to devolve, and I think there's a fine line between good drama and it gets to the love to hate phase. So I think they'll probably come out of that later, seasons later, this starts to devolve, and I'm sure the show, you know, goes through. They all go through like a lull, and then they have to repair and start over again. So, anyway, this is a crazy way for me to meet you and to try to get to know you. But I do feel like I know you a little better based on your opinions, based on your opinion of parenting and friendship, and you know, the tween talks. And I hope I get to kind of know you, you know, in a different way, in a different
same.
Medium too.
Absolutely mutual. And I've been a huge fan and admirer of all you've accomplished.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thanks for watching.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.